This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Now, in 2020, a new batch of secondary school students will have the distinction of being the first batch of fourth formers under the new secondary school standard curriculum, where they will be required to select five elective subjects from either STEM or art and humanities packages. Now, with the push towards Industry 4.0 gaining momentum, careers in STEM are going to be all the rage. But is an affinity towards STEM subjects in late secondary school too far off the starting blocks? And more importantly, are there enough STEM jobs to meet the demand? In the studio with me today is Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, who's Executive Director at the Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre. And we're going to be finding out her thoughts on promoting science literacy. If you have any questions on this topic, please feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 03-7733-2900. Good afternoon, Mahal.
Good afternoon, Sumitra. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, we're going to be talking about STEM careers a lot today. So I think a good place to begin is what STEM actually encompasses, and because we're going to be using that acronym quite a bit.
Okay, I know STEM has become a buzzword, and it's a very important subject. What STEM, I would say STEM, we can talk about STEM education or STEM career. Let's start with STEM education. STEM education.
STEM being science, technology,
engineering, and mathematics. STEM is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So STEM education combines these subjects related to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and in an interdisciplinary approach. Now, why is this important? Because these subjects develop the critical thinking, the analytical thinking in the student's mind, and the students are groomed in that way. And we need STEM education. The emphasis is because we want innovators. And not just any innovators, but innovators, the next gen, the next generation innovators. As we are moving on into IR 4.0, we need the next generation innovators. We need technopreneurs. And we also need science literacy to be elevated among our population.
Okay. So, you know, all of this sounds a little bit aspirational to me, technopreneurs, science literacy to be kind of elevated. Maybe you could break it down for us in explaining really what are the jobs of the future? What do they look like, and how do we get there? How do we get our kids kind of be prepared for the jobs of the future?
Okay, Sumitra, now I have to ask you a question before I can answer this. Are you asking what are the jobs available or going to be available in Malaysia? Or are you asking what are the prospects internationally for STEM graduates or for people who have pursued STEM?
Good return question. Let's look at it from a Malaysian perspective first.
Okay. The reason why I ask, it's, you know, this huge disparity between what's happening in Malaysia and what's happening internationally. I personally think Malaysia has a long way before we can really create a huge industry, players in various fields and sectors of STEM. If you ask me about biotechnology itself, which is my forte, I don't think there's an industry in biotechnology. Although we have been trying to champion this since 2005 and even before 2005. The same also with any other industry, engineering, for example. We might have construction, we might have engineering firms, but what is happening in this firm? Are we really doing research and development, or are we just bringing in technology from outside and we are just applying this in our industry?
But so, Maha, we have a national policy on Industry 4.0. Surely the foundations are already being put into place to get those jobs up and going.
Okay, now let me go back then. Now we have a policy, or people are talking about IR 4.0, Industrial Revolution 4.0, but we had the same thing for biotechnology in 2005. And where are we now? See, biotechnology policy was divided into three phases. Phase one was just capacity building. Phase two is supposed to be building up the industry. And then phase three, this industry to be global. And phase three is supposed to be 2020. And we have not even gotten local biotech companies even big enough in Malaysia. How are we even, we can't even talk about them going global. So will IR 4.0, will all this talk again, after 10 years or 20 years from now, Will it be a repeat of biotechnology policy? So I am cautiously optimistic, or I'm very conservative about this.
Mm. Okay. But then, okay, so that's from a Malaysian perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What if then we look beyond Malaysia? Let's say, okay, fine, forget careers in Malaysia, STEM careers in Malaysia. What if we want school children now to be competitive on an international level?
Okay, that is what I actually champion. A lot of parents and students come and ask me, is STEM a good field? It is the best field you can be. It's so exciting, so fascinating, you know, looks like in every STEM field, things are limitless. Elon Musk is talking about sending tourists to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's going to be a huge wave, and a lot of industry is being created outside Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would say for Malaysian students, it's exciting field. And I would really encourage students to get into this, but with a caveat that these students and these parents must work towards developing themselves to be international standard.
Okay, so let's drill it down a little bit, and let's drill it down to your particular field of biotechnology, right? What's on the horizon? Why do we need more biotechnologists? What sort of challenges do we hope for biotechnologists to solve in the future?
Okay, so biotechnology is a very, very interesting field and so much of potential. I'm sure many of us have heard about SDG, Sustainable Development mm-hmm. Goals. And if you look at SDGs, there is zero hunger, zero poverty, land below water, life below water, life above land, and all these things. And if you look at all each one of these SDGs, global challenges, including climate change, biotechnology has got a role to play.
Could you maybe share an example or two?
Okay. Mm. Now, climate change. So with climate change, agriculture is not going to be business as usual. We cannot be growing the same variety of crop because we've got drought, we've got flood, we've got salinity. So we need new varieties of crops. Mm-hmm. Now, how are we going to develop this? So we can develop it using conventional methods mm-hmm. like conventional breeding, irradiation, mutation, crossbreeding. But there is also molecular tools like genetic modification, gene editing, which everything falls under biotechnology. But some are conventional biotechnology, mm-hmm. some are modern biotechnology. And I don't know how many people have heard about synthetic biology.
Now, tell me what that is.
Okay. So we know there are bacteria, there are natural bacteria in the soil, in the environment, marine ecosystem. But today we are talking about bioplastics, for example. Now, bioplastic is it's a very potential thing because we want to get rid of plastics.
Mm.
But then plastic, we know, is a very multi-purpose, very useful material. It's a devil that we can't hate and we can't love as well. So bioplastic could be an alternative, but how do we create this bioplastic? And synthetic biology can really be helpful. Now, what is synthetic biology? It's a combination of mathematics, engineering, biology, chemistry, and put all these things together.
Mm.
So that is why in the beginning I said STEM has to be approached in an interdisciplinary approach. We cannot say it's just biology or chemistry. Now, everything is going to come together in the future. So what we do in synthetic biology, or what scientists do in synthetic biology, mm-hmm. is they reinvent organisms.
Mm.
So now, say, for example, a bacteria. This bacteria is called, the real name, for example, is E. coli,
mm-hmm.
which is often found in the environment, in wastewater. And if E. coli does certain things naturally, but can we make this E. coli do something completely out of their scope? For example, degrading plastics.
Mm.
So what scientists will do is they will remove all the bacteria, all the gene, the current gene from E. coli, assemble new gene
mm-hmm.
and put it into E. coli and make this E. coli completely a new organism.
Mm.
So that is why it's called synthetic biology, because the biological organism is developed through a synthetic way, but again using just organic material. So now this E. coli can actually degrade plastics. Now, you see how biotechnology can actually solve a huge global issue. Now, what is happening internationally? You asked me about international industries.
Mm.
Now, there are so many companies, especially startups and SMEs, who are already working on this.
Internationally. All right.
Now, the other example I would like to say is, I'm not sure if listeners have heard about Impossible Burger, Future Food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a restaurant.
Plant-based. Yes.
So you can now have a burger, which is not the soy-based, you know, the Indians and the Chinese have got this mock vegetarian.
Soy-based.
Yeah, soy-based vegetarian chicken and prawn. But this is a little bit different. This is even more advanced, where this will completely look and taste and even have the blood effect of beef or chicken.
Or red meat.
And many people who have tasted it have said that it tastes even better than meat. Mm-hmm. Now, why is it important? Because it can cut down on our livestock industry.
Yes.
And that will then cut down on environmental degradation. It will cut down on the methane gas that's emitted.
Emissions.
Because that contributes to greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. Now, you see, these are the things that biotechnology has a role to play. Mm-hmm. But is it all happening in Malaysia? This is my frustration. So it's not happening in Malaysia. It's happening outside.
And it's a valid frustration. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick break now. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you, how do we make it happen in Malaysia? How do we move the conversation towards not just the government saying, yes, we know we need to be interested in STEM, but let's move the conversation to how do we get students interested in STEM and how do we get the government invested? So we're going to be doing that in a short while. I'm speaking with Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, Executive Director of the Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre, about how to get school children invested in STEM careers. We already know STEM careers will be crucial to the future workforce. But getting kids interested and engaged is a completely different kettle of fish. We'll be answering those questions after a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, please tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We've already had a couple of WhatsApps coming in. Or you can call us at 0377-332-900. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. I'm speaking to Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, Executive Director of the Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre, about why it's important to get kids excited about science, technology, engineering and mathematics from an early age. If you have any thoughts on the topic, please tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can call us at 0377-332-900. So, Maha, before the break, we were talking about the fact that there is no doubt that STEM careers are the careers of the future. There is no doubt that STEM careers or people who go into STEM research are going to help us solve complex global problems. But you also did mention that a major frustration that you had was while these advances are all happening internationally, it's not yet happening in Malaysia. And that's not for the lack of announcements and campaigns, as far as I'm concerned, because as I mentioned at the beginning of today's show, in 2020, the first batch of Form 4 students will be able to pick STEM subjects to encourage them towards pursuing STEM careers, right? But this is while they are 15 going on 16. In your opinion, in your experience, is this the right age? Is this an early enough age to develop an affinity towards the sciences?
Okay, now I'm going to even take a step backward and say, while all the countries or most of the countries in the world are combining STEM and humanities and art, STEM, humanities and art subject, we are segregating and we are saying that we have got these packages and students will be taking these packages based on psychometric test, based on their interest. Now, I'm not sure how a 15-year-old child or student can determine their career path at that early stage. Now, I'm one who completely diverted from my field to another field, and I'm completely a hybrid, which we can talk about it later. So I think it's really too early. That's my point, one. Number two, we have to combine STEM subjects with humanities and art, and we are going the opposite direction. And number three, we know Malaysian classrooms are very big. They are all like 40 students in a class, and a teacher will not know each one personally to understand the student's aptitude, attitude, passion, aspiration, dreams. So how is a teacher going to determine that this student will do well in biology or this student will do well in physics or will do well in history and arts? So I'm not sure how this is going to happen. And I don't think it's the best approach.
You know, I'm really glad you said that, Maha, because we had an interesting WhatsApp just come in from Sam. And Sam says, warm greetings, BFM. Is STEM the best education formula model for Malaysia 2020 onwards? Is there a model which is more holistic than STEM? And his suggestion or her suggestion is, can't we, Malaysia, create our own strategic congruent model, for example, STEAMED, S-T-E, A for art and D for design and craftsmanship. And Sam is an ecosystem developer.
Now, STEAM and or STEAMED has, you know, people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the best approach because even people in the fashion industry are now talking about biomaterials for their clothes,
right,
for their whatever you call it, their line, their fashion lines. Mm. And I know some people get inspiration from atoms and STEM graphics to do fashion designs. So I think it has to be combined. I really strongly think it has to be combined.
Okay, let's go back to a... I'm going to use the word problem, a problem that we're having here in Malaysia. We know that the way forward is a holistic kind of approach. However, it cannot be denied that we don't have enough school children genuinely interested in the sciences. They either perceive it as it being too hard or too difficult to get into. How are we ever going to get to the point where, you know, we're going to churn out STEM graduates towards STEM careers when people are not even, children are not even interested in sciences to begin with? How do we get them interested?
Now, I think this the problem is because we're not doing enough to showcase STEM as something that's fascinating, that's something that if you get into STEM, you will be a problem solver. And what are the industries? As we spoke earlier, the industry is not ready to employ as many STEM graduates as the government is seeking to produce. Mm. You know, we always say we need 100,000 graduates with PhDs, but what are they going to do?
Mm.
I know so many PhD graduates who do not have jobs in Malaysia in STEM area. So for me, I think there's no employment opportunities. And those who are in STEM, the salary is not, it does not compensate for whatever the journey that they have taken. And also, the other reason is also, are we really celebrating our scientists? Now, who are the role models? Are we creating idols for our students to say that I want to be like Professor Sharifa, I want to be like Professor Mary or whoever, the local names? When we ask a child, what do you want to be? If you want to be a scientist, who is your favorite scientist? It's always a foreigner name.
Mm.
Now, are we short of scientists? We've got so many experts. The best internationally renowned virologist, the best astrophysicist, but I don't think these people are celebrated enough.
Mm.
Just like how we celebrate fashion designers.
Or celebrities.
I think so. I don't want to name anything, anyone here, but then recently there was a woman magazine which named women, I don't know what was the term used, but then women who are inspirational. But I hardly saw any women in science featured there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always, we are still worshipping, you know, I saw this thing, among all the Kardashians, be the Curie. But we are not celebrating the Curie. We are still celebrating Kardashians. So how do you expect children to get in to say, I want to be a Curie?
So I would then push it back to the very earliest education that a child receives. It has to start from the parents.
I would say so. Now, let me share a recent or not a study from UK, which says that curious children ask 73 questions a day and parents struggle to answer more than half of them.
73 questions a day.
Yes. And this is UK. I'm sure Malaysian children are as smart, and I'm sure many children ask many questions. So out of 2,000 parents of kids aged between 5 to 16, only 67% struggle to respond to their kids' scientific curiosity. Now, what is the statistics for Malaysia? I'm sure it's lower. 20% of these parents admitted that they didn't know the answer, and many of them make up explanation, pretend that no one knows the answer. I'm sure many parents, Malaysian parents, can, you know, will feel guilty of making up these statistics, that they make up explanation, or they say, oh, no one knows this. This is so, you know, we are misleading our children. Mm. Malaysian parents, to me, we are not playing an active and participative role.
So how can Malaysian parents play that role?
Okay, what we do is we always tell our children that you must have a reading habit. Do we read at home? Probably not. Mm. So what Malaysian parents should do when it comes to STEM is they must have the science literacy. Mm. Now, I'm not saying they should read up everything and know details about every field of science, but they must have the same curiosity as the child. Mm. If they have that, then they can, you know, they can actually have discussions at home revolving around science. There's so many YouTube videos, so much of information on the net. They can make it a culture, a hobby, a leisure time at home to sit with their children, look at, you know, watch TED Talks, discuss, debate, argue. Science can generate a lot of debate, mm-hmm. because when emerging technologies, even genetic modification, cloning, nuclear technology, we have polarized debate. Mm-hmm. There are ethical issues. So parents can actually make this a discussion at home. But I'm not sure if this is really happening in many households in Malaysia.
Let me play the devil's advocate here, Maha. You're talking about what I feel is an ideal situation. Not every Malaysian parent has this privilege, this ability to be able to spend that time or money even on their child to get internet access and books and resources when we don't have an even playing field. How can parents do that?
Okay, well, this is not just for parents to play this role, but then teachers. Now, I said the science literacy level among mm-hmm. parents should be elevated and they should take actions to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, how many teachers, science teachers, whether it's biology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, they really keep themselves updated with current trends in science. Mm-hmm. So teachers themselves should try to play the role of inspiring students and telling them the exciting things that's happening in this area outside Malaysia. So students feel like, yes, this is the field I want to be. Mm. So I'm not sure if teachers play this role. Now, let me tell you, give you one example. Without internet, what could mm-hmm. we do in remote areas, in rural areas, in a fishing village? Mm-hmm. Can we inspire a student or students in a fishing village to be an aquaculture specialist by using the examples around them? So, you know, that's fishing village. And mm-hmm. then we can say, look, in the future, maybe we can have farmed aquaculture, and this probably is already happening. And how can you become an aquaculture specialist, mm. a marine specialist? Now, how can we get Orang Asli, a student, talk about soil science? Orang Asli knows about soil. They know what is best, what best can grow in that particular piece of land. Mm. And they know how to rotate their crops. Mm-hmm. How can we get students, the teachers in those areas, talk about something that can be seen in their environment? So using their everyday lifestyle, using what can be seen in their environment as an example of how science impacts all these things. Mm. And how these people can then elevate from what their parents are doing to something better.
Okay, so you've mentioned, now we've talked about parents, we've talked about teachers. Let's take the bull by the horns then. Is the way science is being taught currently really sufficient for children to develop an affinity towards STEM subjects?
I must say no. I'm a parent. And my daughters finished their Form 5 and they did not like how it was taught. But luckily for them, I was inspiring them in STEM, so they ended up in STEM field. But I don't think so. I think the pedagogy is not good enough. Mm-hmm. The quality of teachers must be improved. And even if we have qualified teachers, they are not passionate enough. So I remember once my daughter came back from chemistry class and she said, I asked the teacher, why does the solution turn white? And then the teacher said, yeah, it turns white. That's it. Just take it and just answer the question that when you add this and this, it turns white. Mm. So I don't think that's the way to teach. Definitely it's not the way to teach. Science is about curiosity. It's about analytical thinking. It's about critical thinking. It's not about taking things for granted. So I think a lot more needs to be done on how we teach STEM in school and who teaches STEM in school.
So who should be teaching STEM? subjects.
It's not just the qualified teachers. As I said, it must be the person who teaches science must be qualified enough, but must also be passionate enough. Mm-hmm. And someone who is herself or himself curious about science, who wants to read and keep themselves updated. Because I'm not sure if this culture is prevalent among our teachers.
Mm. So if it's not going to filter down, then you're not going to get school kids who are suitably excited about science. I certainly remember when I was in school, I had excellent chemistry and physics teachers. In fact, physics lab used to be one of my favorite classes because of our fantastic teacher and the way she conducted experiments. It really, really made you want to go home mm-hmm. and think about what she had said in labs, right?
Sumitra, there's something else with school system. Now, this year, SPM edition. Maths. A lot of people complained that one of the questions is really, really tough to crack, and even teachers took more than an hour to crack one question. Now, how do you expect students to do it? And the paper is probably 2 hours, and you can't take an hour just for one question. Mm. Now, my point is, why do we have to showcase that science subjects are so tough? Do we want to show off that these are really tough subjects? It's elite, only for the elitists. Now, exams are meant to assess the student's capability and capacity. Mm. It's not meant to scare them away, kill their spirit and interest in this subject. Now, a lot of students, PT3, for example, has also been made so difficult, science and maths, in the pretext of HOTS, higher order thinking skills. Now, I think analytical thinking is very important. HOTS is good, but not completely taking things out of what is taught in school. Mm. Now, what happens is a child who is very good in maths or science is going to come out of the exam hall and say, look, I think I'm not a STEM material. I think I'm not going to choose science in Form 4. And this is what is happening.
But there has to be a certain level to the curriculum.
There has to be a certain level, but it should not be completely plucked out from what was taught in school. So an application of what is taught in school, how they apply different chapters together, a combination is good. But completely taking out of the curriculum is something that I would not condone. And I think it's completely wrong.
So we've gone through quite a few kind of aspects to the how to get kids interested in STEM subjects, right? There's one more aspect that we haven't yet talked about, which is you can have a child who is very interested in the sciences. You can have a child who perhaps does well in the sciences and then who goes on to tertiary education and goes into universities. But preparing for a STEM career is a completely different ballgame. What can universities do to prepare their graduates?
Now, the most important thing we must understand is STEM itself is becoming very interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary. Mm. Now, take, for example, environmental protection. You need to understand a little bit of ecology, biology, and even engineering and so many other fields in environmental protection. Mm. Nanotechnology, there is a question. The atomic movement or nano level of atoms, which field does it belong to? Does it belong to chemistry? Does it belong to physics? Does it belong to biology? Mm. Nanotechnology is a field that is, you know, completely multidisciplinary. And maths comes together, chemistry, biology, physics, everything comes together. And I think this is where we are making a mistake, going back to schools, where we are asking students to choose either physics or biology. Mm. Now, biomedical engineering, a combination of bio and engineering. Mm. So are we preparing our students for STEM career, mm. which is completely multidisciplinary? Now, universities, I think universities are not doing very bad. Because each university, for each program, they've got industry advisory panel where industry experts come and advise whether the curriculum is up to date, mm-hmm. whether they need to revise the curriculum. I think, to me, most problems stems from schools, mm-hmm. the way it is taught, the way students are streamed, the way we judge students at a very early age. So I feel universities are doing pretty well and they're evolving well to suit into the multidisciplinary nature.
Okay, so we've gone from parents to teachers to schools to universities, and now we're back almost full circle to the job market, which at the very beginning of this interview, you were very honest about, and you said that there aren't enough jobs. there really aren't enough jobs. Before I ask you a question about this, I want to read out a WhatsApp comment that's come in, right? And Sudarshan says that as a parent looking ahead to enroll my daughter in a biotech honours degree at an Australian uni, that was 12 years ago, she as well as I regret the decision. The Malaysian government is all talk about bio this and bio that, and nothing to employ the grads. My daughter ended up working at a job completely different from what she studied. And you know, it's a valid concern. What would you say about this? I know your feelings on this already.
I know. And I feel so bad for Sudarshan. And Sudarshan is not alone. There are so many graduates who come up from biotechnology or bio-based degrees. They are working in completely different areas. And this is where the government should really do something. And until now, I've not heard anything about science, technology or biotechnology. So, and this is not only in biotechnology. I as I said before, the industry, many other industries. Take, for example, pharmaceutical. It's a critical course, very highly respected course. But what does a pharmacy do when he or she graduates? Mm. Dispensing medicine in the hospitals. The only thing they can do if they don't want the routine job is get into pharmaceutical industry. But how many pharmaceutical industry do we have? And is there R&D work there, which most graduates want to get into R&D. They want to get into hands-on research. Many aspire. They come to me and say, I want to do cancer research. I want to take this up. But then how many organization, companies or research institutes really do cancer research, and how many jobs are vacant for these people? So
this is a conundrum. Maha, we actually have a call on the line. I'm going to take the call. Let me just get this person on the line. Hello, Dr. Mohammad Idris. Yes. You're on the line for Live and Learn. Dr. Maha is here in the studio. Do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I was going to give some comment, if you don't mind.
Yes, please, sir.
I have a PhD and all that, from all the 3 degrees from United States, And I found out that what I did, study in the U.S. is a repetition from what I study in school in Malaysia. So I found out that, you're going to repeat when you go to university. You don't have to learn in school biotech and all that. When you go to university, it's a repetition, The same, the first year, they teach you all the basic science, basic maths, things like that, So why I feel that students in Form 4, Form 5, they shouldn't streaming. I learned Hamlet and all that in school also, So it's better they do kemahiran hidup and general science, so that they're prepared. They can do some home economics, things that they can really practice when they go up.
Excellent suggestion. Thank you so much, Dr. Okay. Mama Adrestin. Thank you for calling. Good
You're
afternoon.
Welcome. Bye.
Excellent suggestion, wouldn't you say?
Okay, I think Dr. Mohammad is completely correct, because as I said, I'm also speaking as a parent. Now, when I was doing science, biology, chemistry, physics in school for Form 5, it was not as elaborate as what my daughters did. Mm. And when I saw my daughter's curriculum, it's what I did for Form 6. Mm. That is why I keep saying, why do we have to showcase that science is for the elitist? Mm. It's so tough. You have to know all these things. No, this is what they do in Form 5 is going to be repeated in A-levels or matriculation or foundation. So why do we have to torture these children? And then what we're doing at the end is just killing their spirit.
And I know one place that their spirit doesn't get killed is at the Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre, because you're all about promoting science literacy there. We're fast running out of time, but I don't want to miss the opportunity to find out, Maha, what are you doing at MABIC at the moment to kind of encourage kids to love sciences?
We go to schools, we organize workshops on biotechnology, we tell them what is biotechnology, what the field entails and what are the career prospects. But I'm also, nowadays, I'm very, very honest with my audience, with whoever comes and talks to me. I tell them, this is a great field, but if you want to be in this career, you want to do well, make sure you groom yourself to be international level and seek your opportunity outside. Mm. Now, I have to be very honest. So we go to schools, we do that. And then we also, now on the 21st, this weekend, we have got a coding workshop for children. We have got children aged even 5 signing up for that. So it's going to be about logical thinking.
Maha, can I ask a little bit more about the coding workshop? So it's on this weekend, which is on Saturday the 21st.
That's right.
And are there still spaces? Are people allowed to still sign up?
Well, it has to be very quick because we have to get a few, you know, because it involves children and we want to make sure that the safety of children is taken care of because it falls under our responsibility.
Can I ask how much the coding workshop is?
Okay, let me try to remember that. I think it's 30 for a child. If two children from the same family, I think it's 60. I'm not very sure. They can always go to our website or Facebook to find out, but it's not very expensive.
To the MABIC website, right?
To the MABIC website
Malaysia
or Facebook.
Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre's website. Yeah. Okay.
But the other thing that we do in Malaysia, in MABIC is we have got the first science newspaper in Southeast Asia. It's called the Petri Dish. We've got at least 4 pages just meant for anyone. You don't have to be in the science fraternity. You don't have to be a researcher, but just anyone where we bring out the wow factors of science. You know, children always ask, why is the rainbow these colours, mm-hmm. and why does the food taste this?
How the do we 73 questions that they ask their parents a day.
Exactly. So we try to answer these questions. And this is where I feel parents can use this as a tool to sit at home in the living room to bring science into their living room.
Maha, I must tell you, you know this already, but I'm a huge fan of the Petri Dish. I think it is a fantastic publication. I really think it deserves to be in every Malaysian household.
Oh, thank you so much, Sumita.
And on that note, Maha, thank you so much for coming into the studio today. I wish you and MABIC all the very best for 2020. Here's to science literacy for every single Malaysian.
Thank you. Thank you, Sumitra.
I've been speaking to Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, Executive Director of the Malaysia Biotechnology Information Centre, about science literacy and why we need to get our kids on the science, technology, engineering and mathematics wagon now. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.